Well, I can say good morning today, even if not tomorrow. Hello, everyone. The subject is Eichor. Now, the Eichor is a sefer which was written by Yirmiyahu Hanovi. I assume you know the background, but very briefly, in Yirmiyahu chapter Lamed Vav, he sent out Baruch, his secretary, to read out chapters 1, 2, and 4 of Eichor. He took it to the Yerushalayim on the Yom Tzom. It was a day of special convocation, and it got eventually to the ears of Yehoyakim the king, who got very annoyed about it, and he decided, look, I don't believe in Yirmiyahu's prophecy. He took the Megillah and he tore it with a scribe's knife, and he threw it into the Och, into the brazier. The Och is a place where you'll burn the like a workman's fire, and he burnt the Megillah. Baruch went back to Yirmiyahu and told him what had happened, and Yirmiyahu said, look, don't think that by burning or tearing the sefer he's going to remove the Churban. We'll write it all over again, but this time we're going to write another Megillah on top of the first one, just to show that it is definitely going to happen. And then he wrote, according to the Medrash, he then wrote chapter 3, which is in 3 verses each. As you know, the first chapters 1, 2 and 4 follow the Aleph Beis in 1 verse each. Chapter 3 has 3 verses each of the Aleph Beis. And the Medrash continues that he also added on chapter 5. So now we have the final Eichor, chapters 1, 2, 3, 4 and 5. The question, of course, which immediately comes to mind is that if you've written a sefer, what chapters 1 and 2, you don't write chapter 4. After 2 comes 3. So it should have been chapters 1, 2 and 3, and our chapter 3 should have been chapter 4 and 5. Why did it get changed round? That's question 1. The second question we've got is, why did he necessarily follow the Aleph Beis? Throughout the first 4 chapters, everything follows the Aleph Beis. And you don't find this in Tanakh generally, except perhaps certain kapitlach of Tehillim follow the Aleph Beis. We know Ashrei follows the Aleph Beis without the Nun. There are another example. But in general, there must be some specific reason why we need to follow the Aleph Beis. And don't give me the answer, which is I once heard, which is not correct, that you need the Aleph Beis to be able to remember the order. Now, that's all very well for the Pythonim, whether he made an acrostic, whether they had to follow the Aleph Beis, so people could follow the order. Tanakh is not meant to be learnt by heart or read by heart. It's meant to be we've got to remain biksav. So there's no need to write it in the form of the Aleph Beis. There's got to be a more potent reason. The third question is, what's this Eichor all about? We seem to have Eichor always seems to mean something miserable. We've got 3 chapters of Eichor starting with Eichor in Parshas Devarim. We've got Eichor Esor Levadi, which we say to the Eichor tune, and we've got in the Haftorah Chazav Chazoin, is it Eichor Oysol Lozona Kiryo Ne'emona? Wherever you've got Eichor, it's bad. It's so bad that even in Shir HaShirim, which is the happiest of all Sephorim, there's an Eichor there, Eichor Tabit Batzorayim. The Medrash says, what's Eichor doing in Shir HaShirim? What's it doing there? And the Medrash then goes on to explain that Eichor Tarbit is the one part of Shir HaShirim which is rather miserable. So it seems that the word Eichor has in it this connotation of upset. And perhaps the final thing, there are two more things we can look at. The second final thing is the question of the order of the Aleph Beis. This is actually quite fascinating, because you'd expect the Aleph Beis to follow Aleph Beis Gimel until you reach Tov. Well, it does so in the first chapter, if you look carefully. But if you look at chapters 2, 3 and 4 of Eichor, you'll find that something gets mixed up. I don't see any blank faces here. Most of us, you should know it. It's the fact that the Ayin and the Pei get mixed up in chapters 2, 3 and 4. we're going to see why those letters changed. And finally, I'm sure you're all fully aware of all the small letters in the Megillah. There are actually three of them. There's one in the first chapter, Lo Aleichem, with the Lamed is short, small I mean, and then you've got in the Test of Tovu Shorecho, was it Shorecho? Tovu Shorecho, thank you very much. Sorry? Tovu Shorecho, yeah. Shorecho, yeah. The Test is written small, and the final one is in chapter 3, L'Aves, the Ayin of L'Aves is written small. Why, Davka, does these things happen? Right. Going back to the beginning again, what happened was, as the most beautiful Marashah in Baba Kama, of all places, Daf Nun Hei, who explained what went on. He says, really, Yirmiyah originally wanted to write, or did write, first chapters 1, 2, and 3. Why did he write three separate chapters? And the answer is, the first chapter represents Bayis Rishon, the second chapter represents Bayis Sheni, and what we have now is the fourth chapter, which was then the third chapter, represents the ultimate Golus leading to Bayis Shlishi. That's how he wrote it. So he wrote three chapters to represent the three Batim. He doesn't say this, but it's very similar to the Ramban in the Chumash, who already said that there were three different wells which are mentioned in the Chumash. The first one was Asek, was it? The second one, Sitno, and the third one is Achovos. It's very similar. Asek represents Bayis Rishon, which where there was a proper Asek, there was something to fight about. There was an Asek, there was a Geshef, there was something to deal with. The second one was Sitno, which is purely Lashon Hara, purely Sotten, no real arguments, there's nothing to fight about, there's nothing to have, and that was the second bias. And finally, Rechoves, which is represents the Rachvus of the bias Shlishi, which will come. So the Ramban works it through there, that's a remez for the future. So the same thing here. The first chapter represents Bayis Rishon, and if you look through it carefully, you will see that it talks about that sort of thing, the cardinal aveis, etc. Whereas the second chapter relates more to the inyanim which took place of Bayis Sheni, Bilodim Achaveiro, and finally the third. Now the fourth chapter represents the Golus Edom and leading to Bayis Shlishi, and you can see beautifully at the end of chapter 3. Sisi v'simchi bas Edom and tamavonech bas Tzion. All of a sudden, the tone changes. We're no longer talking about terrible punishment for Klal Yisrael. We're talking tamavonech bas Tzion. The Jewish problems are coming to an end, and you Edom are going to be in trouble. Edom obviously is Golus Edom, represents the originally the Romans, followed by the Holy Roman Empire, and so on. That would be very helpful, thank you very much. Not because of this, you want me to say it. Right, if you have a look at the end there, it talks about Sisim Simke Basedon, Yosheves Beetzut, and so forth. And it says, Lo Yosef Lahaglo Seif. It's not going to be any more Golus for Klal Yisrael, and so forth. So the end of chapter 3 says, the Marashah is clearly an indication that we've had a heavy Golus, but it will come to an end, and the end of the chapter is Meramezah. That's what happened. So why on earth, when Yirmiyah decided to rewrite it, did he put something right in the middle? Well, this Marashah is very simple. The three times that he wrote it represented each of the three chapters. But if these three chapters which he rewrote, so to speak, are going to represent all three. And he wanted to show that there's a division between the two Beit HaMikdash which were completely destroyed and the Bayis Shlishi which will have a Kiyum. Therefore, he decided to put chapter 3 where it is and push chapter 4, I'm mixing up the old chapter 3, okay, now chapter 4. That's how it got in the middle. And he then goes on to explain, you can see this very clearly from the letter test. In the first, and now what I'm saying is, much of what I'm saying is in the Marashah, I can't remember whether everything is or whether I've added something on or not. But if you look at chapter 1, the letter test says Tumor. The first chapter says Tumor Bishuleo. The Tumor Bishuleo, the first bias represented Tumor. I mean, Arias is Tumor. The first chapter, therefore, is talking about idyonim of tumor which caused the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. The second chapter says Tovu Shoraich. That's talking about the inyon of Benodim Bechaveiro and the destruction of the Churban, Malka Vasura Bagoyim, Ein Torah, and so forth. So that chapter, the test therefore represented by Sheni. If you look at chapter 4, the test is Tov. He says the test was taken as Tov Hashem Lekovov. Now the word Tov intrinsically is something good. In fact, I have the theory that Tov does not mean good in Tanakh. Tov in modern parlance means good. It can mean good, like Yom Tov, a good day. Tov, however, in Tanakh means perfect. There's a lot of proofs for that. Hor HaTov Azev HaLevon, and this, etc. How do we know the Hor HaTov is the Harabais? Maybe it's Everest, or one of the other beautiful, large, important mountains. But Hor HaTov is the perfect mountain. There's only one perfect mountain, and that is the Harabais. So we know Hor HaTov is perfect. There's another beautiful raya from the creation story. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw it was Tov Meod. Frag the Medrash, how can it be Tov Meod? If it's Tov, it can't be Meod. It's automatic. It's tautological. What's the Meod doing there? If you translate Tov as good, of course it can be very good. You can have good and very good. If Tov is perfect, you can't say it's very perfect, because it's absolutely perfect. So the Medrash can only make sense if Tov means perfect. It means perfect spirituality. So that it's an unusual word to use in the context of Eicho, and therefore since it uses the word Tov in chapter 4, it's a remez, we're talking that the Tov will come. Now if you look at chapter 3, all three psukim say Tovim. All three. In other words, Yirmiyahu was being merames that the Indian of the Bat HaMikdash, they would be replaced by good things. You can't destroy the Eicho, but you can hope forward in the future that we'll have a replacement. And the three psukim are, sorry, in the singular, Tov Hashem Lekovov, Tov Yochel V'Dumon, Tov Lageva. And the fourth chapter is Tovim. I got that slightly the wrong way around, beg your pardon. Now, so the fourth chapter, which is originally the third chapter, is Tovim, which is perfect, and the third chapter which he added is also Tov. Just by the way, it's probably also well known that when Yirmiyahu wrote the third chapter, he decided to sign his name. Because if you take the words Ani Ageva, that's a gematria Yirmiyahu. So just to make sure that everybody should know, the Chazal often did that, certainly the Paitonim did it, but it's also quite common in Tanakh that the Mechaber of the Sefer, his name is there in it some hidden way, and Yirmiyahu impressed his name on this third chapter, so you should know it was his, by in the name Ani Ageva, which is the gematria of Yirmiyahu. Right. Now, moving on, talking about the second question, which was the problem of the which one was that? Yes, about the why it's in the form of the Aleph Beis and Eicho itself. The Medrash, in fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says why Eicho. So the Gemara answers because Eicho is gematria 36. This is not just an ordering gematria. It's a Gemara's gematria, so it's got some kedusha. This is 36. And 36, who knows which Masechta starts with 36? Chrysos, right. So they were over all 36 Chrysos. It takes some doing, but it's possible to do, and they did it. And therefore, that is why Eicho has this connotation of something very terrible, because they transgressed all 36 Chrysos. The Medrash also goes on to say that the word Eicho, it comprises of four different letters. Aleph is the Yichud Hashem, Yud is Baseres HaDibros, Chof is the 20 generations of Avraham Avinu that relates to the Bris Milah, and the Hay represents the Chamush Chum Shetor. They broke the whole of that lot, and because they broke all that lot, therefore they got the punishment. That's the Eicho. It's also a more modern interpretation of Eicho. The Eicho stands for Ayeka, but I don't think know whether that's fair or not. But it is mentioned that Ayeko, that is mentioned. Ayeko, which Adam Arishan was, Kodesh Baruch Hu said to him, where are you? The problem with Eicho comes from the fact that you don't know where we stand in Yiddishkeit. We're not completely with the Torah, and therefore a person whom you can say about him, Ayeko, where are you? Therefore he gets the punishment of Eicho. There is another medrash which says that the Eicha Yoshva Bodod is the Bodod is 10. It's also the same thing. How is it that you've neglected the Aseres HaDibros? And the, normally they say it's because of the word. How did you stand Bodod, the sort of bereft of the Aseres HaDibros? I once thought it could actually, as a drush say, Eicha Yud Shebo Bodod. You could say, how is the Yud Shebo? Yoshua could be read Yud Shebo, that means the Kedusha of the Aseres HaDibros, or the Kedusha of the Ten, how has that gone adrift, so to speak? It was a bit of a drush. Now, the Gemara then continues to say, why was it written in the form of an Aleph base? And the Gemara doesn't give the answer which I suggested before, for the very reason that we can't say, in order to remember it, like I said. The Gemara gives a different reason. The Gemara says because they violated the Torah from Aleph to Tof, from A to Z, or in American from A to Z. Aleph to Tof means they just destroyed everything that could be, and therefore the Aleph base, which normally protect Klal Yisrael, therefore they became as a kitrug against Klal Yisrael. And that's why it's written in the Aleph base, the first four chapters. The fifth chapter is not actually written in the form of the Aleph base, but it still has 22 psukim. If you count up all the psukim together, you'll find there are going to be 7 times 22, because you've got the 5 chapters of 22 each, plus chapter 3, which has got 3 times 22, gives you another 2. That's also the concept of the 5 plus 2, which I think I mentioned before. You'll find in the menorah that had 5 candles followed by 2 extra candles. This 5 and 2 occurs quite a lot. The idea of originally being 5 and 2 more being added on. You find it in many contexts. If for example, the Chumash in Valoscha, we have 5 Chumash Torah, but eventually there will be 7, because by even so we will divide it into 3. So you get this concept of 5 plus 2 quite a lot, and you find that in Eicha too. But the interesting thing is this: if you count up all the psukim in Eicha, you get exactly 154. And there's an interesting medrash which talks about Ein Koina in the Torah, in Kisavah, that there was nobody who kept the Torah. Why is Koine referred to the Torah? Because there are 154 prokim in the Torah. Now, I'm not talking about kapitlach, which is a non-Jewish thing, and I'm not talking about psuchas and stumas. I'm talking about prokim. What prokim are is an interesting topic. Another medrash says there are 175 prokim, and it was the communion, the age of Avraham Avinu. But there's a Medrash Keli which says 154 prokim, and I think it's got to do with the cycle. In the Yerushalmi, there were some people who did it every 3 years, and some people did the Chumash every 3.5 years. And if you multiply the number of psukim, the number of sedders which we've got 54 sedders, but if you do it by 3 years, it works out just about right. And the 3 year cycle, they had 154 prokim. So the prokim were really the divisions of the sedras, so to speak, which were necessary for that time. But the interesting thing is this: we're seeing this again in Torah. The Eicha is merames, even in the number of psukim that there are, that they didn't keep the Torah. There are not a lot of Muslim of that sort. Now, back to the Aleph base. The problem we asked was, surely Yirmiyah didn't get his Aleph base mixed up. So why is it therefore that the chapter 1 is correct and the other chapters are not correct? Now, one answer, I think it's the Marshal's answer, he says that, how do you know how the Aleph base goes? Who tells you it's Aleph base Gimel? Who told you it's Aleph base Gimel? How do you know it's not Aleph Gimel base? Which is exactly what Hillel said to the Ger in Shabbos. If you remember, Ger said, I want to learn the whole Torah, but I only want Torah Shabbat Kav, I don't want Torah Shabbat Peh. It was one of the 3 Gerim who came to him. And he answers, oh, I'll tell you, teach the Aleph Beis. And the first day he told him Aleph Beis Gimel Dalad, he told him to come back the next day. The next day he told him a different order. So the man said, yeah, but yesterday you taught me one way, why are you telling me different today? So he said, oh, well, yesterday, who did you listen to? You listened to me. How did you know I was right? Well, you're the Rebbe. Well, if I'm the Rebbe, you've got to listen to me. Whatever I tell you must be correct. Without the Rebbe, you can't learn it. So therefore, you've got to learn from me. So, in other words, the Aleph Beis, we know, because we've got a Masorah from our parents and from our Rebbes, that this is the way the Aleph Beis goes. But who says it's got to be like that? Maybe you and the Yahweh know they had a different Messiah. There's 12 tribes, maybe they have a different Aleph base and a different order. In order to show us that you and the Yahweh have the same Aleph base that we've got, he's got to show that he knows what he's talking about, and therefore the first chapter is written correctly. Once we know he knows his order, then we can learn lessons from changing things around. What is the lesson? Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it was the remnant of the Meraglim, that they put their pay before their ayin. They put their pay, that's their mouth, before their eyes. They said things which they shouldn't say. They said Lashon Hara and they got punished for it. The pay represents the mouth, the ayin represents the eye. Those of you who remember might remember talking about the letter missing from the first bracha of Shemoneh Esra. I'm sure you all remember that every letter of the Aleph Beis is in the first bracha of the Shemoneh Esra, with the exception of the letter Pei, because we ain't got a pair, and that's why we have to say Hashem Sefosai Tiftach Ufi Yagid Telosecha, which has got three Peis in it. It's quite a remarkable thing. We say a pasuk with three Peis in it before we say the first bracha of Shemoneh Esra, which has got no Peis in it. And the answer is because without saying Hashem Sefosai Tiftach, the Avodah Zarah says you're not allowed to start Shemoneh Esra, because who are you to start talking to Hashem? How can you use your pen before the Melech Malchei Hamelachim? How do you dare? So we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give us the Rishus to do so, and therefore we say the Pasuk Hashem Sefosai Tiftach. It's different on the Sesame Tshuva. We've got a Pasuk we put in Zochrein L'chaim, which has got two pays in it, right? Why? Because during the Sesame Tshuva, it's a different gedder. We do have a pair during a Sesame Tshuva. It's an emergency situation. We're allowed to have our mouth, and then there's nothing to stop us talking when we're in dire situation. But the letter pay certainly represents the mouth in many many situations. So now, that's the Marshal's explanation, that the pay is before the ayin only in chapters Beis, Gimel, and Dalet. Another explanation for it is that, quite simply, on a pshat level, if you look at the psukim themselves, the pasuk's got to fit in with what it's talking about. If you look at chapter Aleph, the ayin is talking about al eila ani bochio, and the pei is saying pei sotzion biodeho. It's nothing to do with the eye or the mouth. So it could be that it wasn't the appropriate place to tell us that lesson, to tell, when it's not talking about that. But if you look at chapter Beis is quite clearly potsu olayich pihem. It's talking about the mouth. The whole posse is talking about how they spoke wrongly. And the next, therefore, it's, the next posse is also Hashem, but the main thing is the potsu olayich pihem. The context of the posse is such, it's the right place to tell us this particular limud. You can't just play around with remodeling an extraneous place which is not relevant to it. So that could be a second shot. That, by the way, is what I thought of, but I mean, obviously one has got to be deferred to the Marshal. But in Drush, you're allowed to give your own ideas too. The Torah Tumimo suggests another interesting answer. He says, however bad Klal Yisrael were, there were always some tzaddikim. There were always some tzaddikim. Recently, on the internet, I got a question: how is it possible that our Masorah is correct? There are psukim in Tanakh and Radak who says that there was a time when there was nobody was left in Klal Yisrael who kept anything. When Asher came along, he battled the Talmud, destroyed Yiddishkeit, there's not a single person who kept any Yiddishkeit. If you've got a situation of 20 or 30 years when nobody kept anything, how can you believe Al Masorah is correct? The answer is, when the Radak or the Tanakh says everybody, it doesn't mean everybody. There are always Nevi'im, there was always a Yeshaya or a Yirmiyah. Rubo Kekula, maybe most of Klal Yisrael did go astray, but there were always pockets of people in Klal Yisrael who always kept the Torah and kept the Masorah going. Look at the Rambam in his Hakdama, you can see very clearly there's a Masorah which went from Novi to Novi.
Menashe himself knew it clearly.
But he did Teshuvah afterwards, but the
priest, he still knew it all.
He may have known it, but the problem is, well, right, okay, could be, because he did Teshuvah afterwards, that is true. But there are a number of examples of times when Klal Yisrael seems to have lost Masorah completely. That was the basic question, but the answer is that there was always somebody. And that's actually why the Pasuk says, Nachnu Foshanu Umorinu. It doesn't say Anachnu, and you can't say just Nachnu to fit in with the acrostic so that the Nun should fit in. You can't say that. I mean, Tanakh doesn't work simply with, we'll put a word in there just simply because it fits in with the with the Aleph space. It says Nachnu Foshanu Morinu. Nachnu means not everybody. We did, but there were some people who didn't. So it's not Anachnu, it's not everybody. Some people didn't do the Averis. So, says in here, there were always some people who were tzaddikim. So you can't say that everybody put their pay before the ayin. So the Torah Tumimah's suggestion is the first chapter is put correct. Why? Because this was done by the tzaddikim. They were correct. But the second and third and the fourth chapters, that's everybody else, the vast majority of people who put their mouth before their eyes. That's his explanation. When I was a young boy, I don't know how it came about, I used to learn with my Exeder, my grandfather Oliver Sholem. He passed away when I was bar mitzvah, a month after bar mitzvah. But before bar mitzvah, I used to learn with him, and it seems that we must have learned, we learned various inyanim of Torah B'Ksav actually, and one, he must have taught me something on Eicho. And so I clearly recollect he said the following answer. He said, look, we know from the Meraglim that there's no sheker will be miskayim unless there's a shtickle emes beforehand. Any sheker which has got hasn't got a kernel of emes, nobody will pay any attention to it. It's the usual, it's the way of the con man or the gambler. You, first of all, he lets you win the first time, tells you a little bit of the truth, and then you've got, once you believe the guy and you've done a good deal with him, then he's got you, and he can do the dirt on you afterwards. So the same thing here. It's the emes, which was the first chapter, he said, was the little bit of emes which the Meraglim actually said, which was correct, and then after that they put their pay before the eye. Years later, when I was learning it over again, I found that pshat in the Sifsech HaChomim. It's not easy to find a Sifsech HaChomim on Eicho, and my grandfather certainly didn't have it, but there's many more for him now. But I saw that explanation later on, many years later, in the Sifsech HaChomim. That was the pshat, because this chapter, of course, is basically relating to the Meraglim. The puzzling thing is that Rashi doesn't mention the Meraglim at all. Rashi on the Pasuk tends to relate it to the old times. It's referred to the Zman HaChurban, but perhaps the Gemara in Sanhedrin relates it to the Meraglim, but Rashi feels that he wants to learn Eicho relevant to us and relevant to the Churban too, and that's why I put it in that order. Right, next question, I think we said, was why is the let's just quickly, we haven't got time to do all the small letters, but we've got the letter Tovu Shorech. Why is the letter of Tovu written small? Let's just take this as an example. The Mefarshim give various explanations. One is that the Tess represents Tisha B'Av, and that's why it's Tess based. It relates to the tragedy which took place. It's a remez to Tisha B'Av. Why Davka in chapter base? Well, again, this is the churban, which is the worst churban that there is. Secondly, the suggestion that the letters written small could be because the gates weren't lost. It's only an illusion. We know that the Iron Curtain is still in Yerushalayim, and despite all the archaeological digs that they're doing, they'll never find it, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides you're not going to find it. It turns invisible. It's there, and that's the explanation of why there's a special kedusha in the Har HaBayis. According to the Rambam, there is a kedusha in the Har HaBayis which is caused especially by the fact that the Aron Kodesh is still somewhere down there, and as much as they'll dig for it, they won't find it. It's the same thing here. Tovu Shorayach, the gates were submerged, but they didn't disappear completely. They're there somewhere, and that's why the test is written small, to be merames to that particular fact. I'd just like to finish off perhaps with a word of comfort. It's late now, the other questions I have to leave some of them, but at the end of the Megillah we've got two psukim which end without a hey. This is Zechor Hashem Meho Yolonu Habito Uriyes Choposeinu, but they're written without the hey, and we read it with the hey. And similar Shivin Hashem Elecho V'Nashuva, we hope that Kodesh Baruch Hu will bring back the Beis HaMikdash, and it's written without. Why is it written without the hay? The Apostle Yashivani would say so often, what's the going on here? Well, there's various explanations. One explanation is the hay refers to Hashem, and we don't just to say Venoshu, we don't want the Ksiv is Venoshu, but we want to say it aloud that Hashem should be involved. That's one explanation. Another explanation is that the hay represents five things that we've lost. The five things at the Ksiv, they're not there, but the Habita we say with the Hay because we want them to come back. What are the five things? It's well known the five things are the Hey Vov of the Yud Kei Vov Kei, Yon Ar Kei Skor, the Aleph of the Kisei, that's the third thing. You've got the Yud of Yerushalayim. If you look at the Tzurat Tanakh, Yerushalayim, except in six places, is always written without a vav, without the Yud, Yerushalayim, but we pronounce Yerushalayim, that's a clear nixiv, that's missing. And finally, the Vav of Eliyahu, which was taken as a mashkin, that those five things are missing, and we'll have that back when Mashiach comes. So we're saying here, we want to get our five things back. The five things which have been taken away from us, we want back. That's drush, and that's what they say. I'd just like to answer it up in grammar. I'll be simple dicta. There is a difference between v'noshuv and v'noshuvo, and a difference between habet and habitzah. I'll just take v'noshuv because it's late and don't want to go over more than a minute or two. The word v'noshuv means we will return. The word v'noshuvo means let us return. There's a difference in the grammar. Noshuvo is what's known as cohortative or subjunctive. Let us please return. V'noshuv means we will return. There's no let about it. Noshuv is we will return. So what we're saying is this: Hashem Hashem Alech V'noshuv, please Hashem, let us come back. We're trying so hard. But the ksiv, the deeper pshat is, it's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. It's not just requesting it. The kri is, it looks as though we're having to pray to Hashem. We hope we will get the noshuv. Please let us have him back. But the ksiv, which is the deeper pshat, noshuv. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us our tachat. We will come back. Hashiveinu Hashem Alech v'noshuvo. Let's bear that in mind next time we say it. V'noshuvo means let us please, because that's the derech, but we have a haftacha v'noshuv, we certainly will come back.